Sarah, it's pretty hard to hear you. I don't know if you are you pretty close to your mic?
I can get myself closer. Is that better?
It's kind of a muffling sound. I don't know. Hi, Jay.
Okay. Maybe someone
that sounded better for a minute there.
Oh, I'm turning my computer upside down.
Oh, see that? Well, that's fun.
It probably doesn't help that I'm on. Maybe I could call in and that would be easier.
That's good right there.
I think that sounded good.
Yeah.
Yeah? Does it sound okay? Angela? Okay.
Okay. Mark, can you please call? Here.
Jay Lister?
Here.
Cheryl File? No quorum.
Great. Just for most of the audience, know that I'm not physically there. I'm on the other side of the country right now, 4 hours ahead, but I'm trying to do my best to be able to hear everybody and hopefully the things will go smoothly. So I'll ask someone there. Katie, can you lead?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So I would make a motion to approve the agenda, but it looks like we have maybe some recommended motions to add a few things to the agenda that we didn't anticipate when we set the agenda over a week ago. I'll make first an motion to amend the agenda to add a presentation by DHSS as item number 5. So could I have a second?
I'll second.
Could you say your name when you say that?
It was Megan.
Okay, sorry. I'll get used to everybody's voice. Motion's been made and seconded, made by me, motion seconded by Megan. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes, so the agenda is amended there. I'll make also a second recommended motion to approve the agenda as amended, which I guess we just did that, so. No, I'm sorry, I'm catching up, my brain's catching up, so I apologize. I'll make a motion to accept the amended agenda for August 10th. Could I have a second?
I'll second, that's Katie.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded by Katie. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes for the amended agenda. Next, we'll move on already to number 5, which is part of that amended agenda, which is a presentation by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Coleman Cutchins and Barbara Pennington are employees with the Department of Health and Social Services and have been part of a statewide COVID Echo series, and they're going to be giving us a presentation this evening.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate the board for allowing us some time. If I can screen share, I just have some quick slides I'd like to go through.
I think, can you see them? Coleman, we have them.
Let me give this a try. Oh, I think I got it now.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So I believe myself and Barb Pennington, who's a nurse consultant, and we also may have had Dr. Nates join, the pediatrician. But like I said, my name's Coleman. I'm the lead clinical pharmacist for the state of Alaska. I've been on the senior medical leadership team since day one. I'm the state testing lead and also one of the lead clinicians on the vaccine team and school health. So real quick, just wanted to go through some slides to give you kind of an overview of the CDC guidance for schools and also kind of where we're at for COVID. So Start Strong is the logo you'll see. This really, and the focus of this is in-person learning. I'll mention that a few other times. So where we're at, you know, unfortunately, like the rest of the country, we're really in a high alert level. You can see here places of Southeast are in the blue now. We changed from 3 categories to 4. I will say, due to kind of low denominators, we think these numbers jump around a lot. Just when I checked on Friday, the entire state was in the red. So, and also understanding, you know, that we're all not only connected across Alaska, but to the rest of the country. You know, just like the rest of the country, as you see here on a test in our cases dashboard, we're seeing another pretty significant increase, you know, unfortunately at this stage in the pandemic. Really what's driving this, I'm sure all of you see in the news, is the Delta variant. So the Delta variant is a variant that originally originated out of India. It's more infectious, and it's really taken over as the dominant strain. You know, we can see this from our sequencing reports here in Alaska. You know, looking back, you know, 5 weeks, Delta was kind of less than 10%, you know, then it jumped to like 30%-ish, then 60%-ish, now it's over 90%. Our most recent sequencing report, Delta is 97% of all of our positives here in Alaska, which is really in line with what we see with the rest of the U.S., as well as Europe and a lot of the rest of the world. So why are we concerned about Delta? And really what it comes down to is how easy it is to spread. So if we look at this picture here really shows that. So if we look at the original wild type virus out of Wuhan, on average, one person infected two more. So one case turned into two, turned into four, turned into eight, turned into 16. So we had kind of this doubling effect. You know, if we look at Delta in this middle right square, that number is more like 5 to 8. Now it's looking like it's even closer to 8. So, you know, 1 turns into 8, turns into 72, turns into 400 and something. So, you know, we're not looking at really this doubling effect. We're looking at this 8 times effect now with cases, which is why Delta has really taken over extremely quick. We don't know yet if Delta is more causing more severe illness. What we do know in Delta is for those who were previously infected with wild type, it looks like they're much more likely to get ill with Delta. The vaccines are still in the 88 to 90% effective against Delta. Another thing, this morning I was on the pediatric grand rounds, and it was mentioned that 20% of the people admitted to the hospital in the United States currently are less than 18. You know, when we think about this 8, it's very close to the most infectious diseases we know to human, which are measles and mumps. You know, with measles, one person infects about 12, and with mumps, one person infects about 18. More on Delta, you know, like I said, it is causing some vaccine breakthrough, but we do believe that, you know, and what we've seen, vaccines are at least 88% specifically for the RNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, against Delta. For breakthrough cases, actually, I think I have more of a slide on that later. So I'll talk about breakthrough. Oh, you know, I don't know if I added that. So for breakthrough cases, what we're seeing here in Alaska is roughly 96-97% of our infections are unvaccinated. So if you look at our state, you know, we're right about 50-50. We're about 50% vaccinated, about 50% unvaccinated. The 50% that are unvaccinated are making up about 96, 97, 98% of our hospitalizations, at least 96 for every time period since vaccine has been available. And the half that are unvaccinated are making up, you know, I mean, sorry, the half that are vaccinated are only making up, you know, 3-4% of our hospitalizations. So pretty dramatic difference there between, you know, those who are unvaccinated and those who are unvaccinated. CDC has put out guidance for schools. In that guidance, they did update based on how much more infectious Delta is and how fast it's spreading, that they're recommending universal masking indoors for all teachers, staff, students, and visitors for all K-12 schools, regardless of vaccine status. That changed to, you know, kind of talking about masking, universal masking as part of a net, and I'll talk about the different strategies, but that was just released on July 27th. So for the CDC guidelines for schools, what I want everyone to see is the key takeaway from all of this is students benefit from in-person learning. These guidelines are not to make things harder. They're not to make us, you know, document more COVID cases. They're really designed to keep people in school. That's for the CDC guidance, as well as the American Academy of Pediatrics put out similar school guidance that really agree with one another and go hand in hand. Same thing here, American Academy of Pediatrics, the number one takeaway, their top point is everything possible must be done to keep students in school and in person. So what they talk about is things you need to look about is community transmission, what your vaccine rate is, how much screening testing you're going to do, if you're having an outbreak, and the ages of the children served. These are really the different prevention strategies that the CDC guidance talks about. It's kind of a mesh, you know, which one do you want to do more, which ones do you want to do more of? Maybe if you're doing more of some, you might do less of other. You know, if you have a very highly vaccinated population, you know, say over 90%, maybe you don't need to do as much of these other ones. If you're serving, like say elementary age children who are not, unfortunately not yet eligible for vaccination, maybe you've got to do a lot more of these to keep that population safe. In here, number one theory, and we know that the best prevention strategy for COVID-19 is vaccination. Achieving high levels of vaccine in eligible students, as well as teacher staff and household members, is one of the best strategies we can put this pandemic behind us. You know, I tell everyone it was in the playbook before the vaccine, before the pandemic started, was develop a vaccine and then get as many people as possible vaccinated. American College of Pediatrics also says, you know, vaccine should be given to everyone who's eligible. Really, with vaccine, I think there's a lot of misinformation on this. Vaccine does protect the individual, and it is an individual choice, but the choice to get vaccinated protects everyone around you. We talk about these things like herd immunity threshold, and really what that is more people, as close as we can get to 100%, that protects me as an individual, but it also protects those around me, especially when we're talking about now where not everyone is eligible for vaccine. This is a slide I put in there at the wrong place, really visualizing, you know, the number of hospitalizations from COVID. You know, in this time period, it was 6% were vaccinated, 94% were unvaccinated. Our deaths, same way, 97% unvaccinated, only 3% vaccinated, very small numbers. And we have seen some fluctuation in that. Second point the CDC really talks about is consistent and correct mask use. I did say they actually changed this to recommend universal masking for everybody indoors, because really, aside from vaccine, masking is our second best risk mitigation strategy. I can tell you that, you know, from case reports around the country and just for observations, schools and facilities and institutions where people were universally masked, we didn't see nearly as much spread of COVID when we were having outbreaks setting. American College of Pediatrics also recommends universal masking due to mainly their number one thing is here is there's a significant portion of student populations who's not yet eligible, and also even in our eligible, you know, 12 to 18 year olds, we're nowhere near like 80-90% mark. I think last I looked here in Alaska, we're right about 40% as a state in those 12 to 18. Physical distancing is another tool. An important thing I do want to mention in here is on a couple more slides, where if schools are using universal masking, they actually drop the close contact from 6 feet to 3 feet. So that really helps keeps kids in school. So currently, if you're unvaccinated, you're within 6 feet of someone who has COVID for more than 15 minutes in a 24-hour period, you're considered a close contact and you must quarantine for 10 days. If the school is employing universal masking and everyone in question is masked, then it actually dropped that to 3 feet. So it gives you kind of a 3 feet further grace period for people who would be considered a close contact. Those who are fully vaccinated are not considered a close contact and do not have to quarantine. Screening testing, they have a really nice chart. I encourage you to look at this later. It really talks about when they recommend doing screening testing. A couple additions that I really like that they added is they talked about high-risk sports last year. They added these activities to define high-risk activities, such as ones that involve singing, band, shouting, exercise, specifically when indoors. And they give you some really good guidance on when to consider screening testing. That's kind of a third mitigation strategy behind vaccine and masking. Stay at home when you're sick. I really hope this is something that stays with us post-pandemic, is that people stay home when they're sick so we don't spread other things. Contact tracing, this is the section where they really talk about that 3 foot grace period. So, you know, when you have universal masking in the classroom, you have a case, it shortens that window from 6 feet to 3 feet for people who are known close contacts. Goes into a lot about sports, actually even as far as to recommend students who are not fully vaccinated should consider not participating in high-risk activities, but I encourage you all to read that on your own. It's straight out of the CDC guidance. And then for travel, I know there were some questions on travel in the pre-submitted questions, so I just did want to bring up the CDC travel guidance because it's extremely straightforward. So for domestic travel during COVID-19, CDC says specifically delay travel until you are fully vaccinated. So they're saying that, you know, travel is not safe unless you're fully vaccinated. If you are not fully vaccinated and must travel, though, however, they do recommend get tested before you travel. 1 to 3 days, wear a mask universally, get tested for 3 to 5 days after travel, stay home for a full 7 days, and monitor for symptoms for 14 days. For vaccinated people, there is a recommendation now just updated that if you have an exposure or even consider with travel to not quarantine, but just get tested at 3 to 5 days and monitor for symptoms. I think it's important to remember, you know, at any point you have any symptom that could be COVID, vaccinated or not, the recommendation is definitely to test. And that's all I have in the presentation. I don't know if anyone else from the state was able to join in, and I'd be happy, if you have anything to add, I see Barb, you're on, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Barb, you're on mute.
One of the issues, Erica, you wanted us to go over was how about K through two and masking? There are a lot of districts that have had their K through two masks, and I've been in them, and the kids do great. So it's totally up to your district what you're going to do, but that is the current recommendation, and I know some preschools that have had their kids masking too, but they actually do really fine. So is there anything else you wanted us to address specifically?
Have any other specific questions from that, or anything about travel or masking or any of the other information?
Did they see what we, like, kind of what we were working towards, or?
Not specifically. No. I mean, I had asked them some questions. I think, you know, some of the questions that we were wrestling with is trying to balance, you know, kids, the travel protocols, and then also having kids, you know, not missing as much school, because of course mm-hmm. if they're in elementary school and they have to travel, they obviously can't be vaccinated, so you know that's 7 days potentially out. So we were, you know, talking about some ideas around, you know, if they are fully masked when they come back, if, you know, would there be any options within that to even look at maybe the Binax testing like we're doing with our athletes, just trying to think about some of those. And we had actually asked, we have one of our local doctors is here too, about that, and you know, if there's a way to sort of manage that that's functional, balancing the need for them to be in school with the public health part of it.
So we'll let you know too, because this may help for consideration. It really looks like we're going to get approval for kids 5 to 11, like November-ish. So what my hope is that, you know, the kids in the elementary age will be able to be fully vaccinated as soon as about the first of the year. And the other thing I do want to mention, if you're talking about testing with Binax for screening, those tests are done if done regularly. I kind of always tell people, you know, one antigen test at one point in time, if it's negative, isn't all that helpful, because they're, you know, but if you're doing them, say, like with athletes, where the recommendation from the CDC is to test at least once a week or at least twice a week, when you're doing it at that regular interval, it becomes a much better tool and a very good tool for screening testing. So there isn't anything specific in the CDC travel guidance around testing for travel that isn't sports related. But, you know, I mean, it would be reasonable to say, okay, if you're willing to, you know, if you're going to travel, something like, okay, test twice a week for the next 2 weeks and fully mask the whole time, especially if you're doing fully masking, and then monitor for symptoms. But there isn't a specific guidance or recommendation that I've seen or evidence to really support that.
Okay.
But I did put the CDC guidance for travel in chat. And I mean, travel through the whole pandemic, unfortunately, is a huge risk factor for disease spread.
Okay. Do you have any other questions about that, Meg, or anybody else? Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for being on tonight. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Reach out anytime.
Thanks so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Have a good meeting. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll move on to student representative report.
So the school is
Kinley, do you have anything?
Currently on summer break right now. Cross country and swim have both started. So if you have a high school, high school that you know of that are interested in either of those, tell them to come try it out. And yeah, and some students are working on summer homework, and we have school starting in about 3 weeks. So yeah, that's about all.
Great, thank you. Anybody have any questions for Finley? Okay. Next, we'll move on to correspondence. We have some correspondence to be read under comments related to the agenda. So, if you want to move into that, then I will speak.
Okay. Then we'll move on to number 8, which is comments from the audience unrelated to agenda items. Do we have any of those, or of everybody who's wanting to comment or is related to the agenda?
So.
Okay, we'll move on to comments from audience related to the agenda items. And if we have, looks like we have a few people that would like to speak, and so we're going to go by our board policy that limits public comments to 3 minutes. And please be aware that comments from the audience, we can listen to them as a board, but we don't interact with, you know, it isn't a Q&A. It's, we just listen to your testimony or your comments. And then we can have a discussion when we're actually under the agenda item. That's the Robert's Rules of Protocol. So we can start with, Mara, I don't know if you have a first come, first serve, but I can certainly keep a clock ticking during it if needed.
I'll go ahead and start with the two that we received by email. Hi, I'm writing to voice my concerns about masks in schools and the decision on if we will be using them or not. I do not think masks are beneficial nor helpful to children, especially.
Okay.
This is from Brittany Martin. My children will be in first and kindergarten this year, and they both are still learning to read expressions, read emotions, and gauge how to interact with individuals. Masks prevent that for them. There have also been many studies showing kids are not getting this sickness, and if they are, it's minimal risks. The death rate in children is low, making the flu a higher risk than death. We do not wear masks during the flu, and there is no reason for masks now. Not only do they not work, they are disgusting, as children do not know how to be clean. Please take this into consideration. Thank you for your time. Okay, and this one was submitted by Sharice Lister. Dear school board members and Mrs. KP, I feel that for the 2021-22 school year, masks should be optional for all students K to 12. To wear a mask or not wear a mask should be a family choice, not a school district mandate. Parents are the ultimate authority and protector of their children and can thus determine what is best. If a parent is scared, they have the right to keep their kids home if they feel they are too at risk. Parents also have the right to send their child to school in a mask if they so choose, and parents should also have the choice to send their child to school without a mask. There are significant social, emotional, and intellectual toils that mask wearing causes to our children. When masks are worn, these toils are harming all of the children all the time. Children are more scared, more depressed, and much less trusting than they were just a year ago. Our kids deserve a childhood where they can see the smile of their teacher, play on playgrounds with their friends, and have the basic freedoms we all had growing up. Another mask mandate would be an unacceptable burden for so many children who, after last year, now hate school. Learning should bring joy and delight, not fear and oppression. Kindest regards. We have one online that I know of to speak. Alice Williams?
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. So I have to apologize because I didn't look at the agenda before. I just realized that the meeting was happening and I got the link. Anyway, I just wanted to express my support of an optional masking policy, if that's possible. I understand you guys are facing a lot of difficulties, and I really appreciate all the work that you guys have put into keeping our kids in school last year and getting us there this year. I know that it's not easy. I strongly am opposed to any policies that differentiate people who are vaccinated versus people who aren't, whether that be staff members or students. I really feel like whatever policy gets put in place, it should be the same for everybody. You know, who gets vaccinated and who doesn't is really a personal choice. From my perspective, I really feel like that's something that if someone chooses to do that for themselves or their children or their family members, that's really their own business, and that they shouldn't be treated differently because they chose to get vaccinated or because they chose not to for whatever reason. And so I would really like to see whatever policies are implemented as far as like student travel and, you know, masking in school, any of those rule sets that are going to be put in place, you know, how long you have to quarantine after travel, all that stuff, that it's going to be the same regardless of your vaccination status. And, you know, I know that Mr. Cutchins was talking about, you know, a vaccine likely becoming available for younger kids coming up here in November. And I just feel like it's really important that I know that you guys know and understand that some families might not yet be ready to vaccinate their really young children. And so I don't really want that to be seen as like, you know, the answer, like, oh, look, it's available now, so we can just vaccinate all of our students, because some people might not want to make that decision. And so I just want to make sure that, you know, people's individual choices are respected and that that pressure isn't being put on families more so than it already is with, you know, the vaccinated versus unvaccinated, you know, mitigation policies. So anyway, I think that's all. There was one other thing, and I don't know if anyone would be able to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I did watch last week's Echo with Dr. Zink and all of the other people who participate, and they were talking about viral load in vaccinated people who have tested positive compared to viral load in unvaccinated people who have tested positive for COVID, and that those viral loads were quite similar. And so they were looking at, you know, possible transmission among vaccinated people. And this is part of the reason why I'm really opposed to there being different policies based on vaccination status. Anyway, again, if I was incorrect on my understanding of what I was watching on that Echo, someone can please speak up and correct me. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Okay. Mark Tosillo, I'm here in the audience. And I think, you know, it's great to want things to be a certain way, but I mean, science does not bear out that masks are ineffective. Science does not bear out that children are going into the long term to have less complications as a result of this disease. Right now, 20% of the kids in, I forget which state it was today, or patients in the ICU are under the age of 18. Viral loads cannot be compared to the alpha variant, to the delta variant post-vaccine, because it's a totally different virus as far as how much load there is. So the previous studies looking at everyone being unvaccinated compared to people with alpha, there was a definite decrease in viral load. Now Delta has a much higher available viral load in the nose and in the back of the throat, so you're comparing apples to oranges. So I do think, even though people would like to think that the risk is the same for immunized and unimmunized people as it relates to the people around them, it's absolutely not true. I'm not going to belabor it. I'm not going to argue with people. But Your personal choice is your personal choice, but your personal choice, in my mind, ends where it starts to affect other people.
Hi, my name is Jeff Nucci. I live at 5.5 Mile. I just wanted to come to the school board tonight, and you know, we all go to enough Zoom meetings, and the whole goal of the school board meeting is to get kids back in school, so I just wanted to show up and say hi and thank you. I also wanted to thank the school board, the administration, for all their hard work and dedication, you know, in helping navigate this unsettling time of this COVID-19 virus and all the rest of this stuff that's going on. But the overriding goal is keeping the kids in the school. They're difficult decisions that we're all making, and you're making, especially in the front lines. And the overall goal is, you know, keeping the kids in school. The Borough Assembly needs to do a little bit more. I'm on the Borough Assembly, and I think the Borough Assembly needs to do a little bit more. We've been asked by the school superintendent to address the protocols and guidelines, and that's on next Monday's agenda. And we're going to talk about it if they want to. We just need to do more. Currently, I'm working with staff to try and formulate a plan to have better communication between the school staff, hospital staff, and putting a plan in place. The borough has kind of washed their hands of it for a while, and we need to reconstitute some of the players here. It doesn't have to be a full-blown EOC, but we need to do more. I said the other day at the meeting that the borough government is the overall umbrella for the school, for the city. And under that umbrella is the school umbrella and the hospital. Yeah, but right now there's no umbrella from the borough, and we need to fix that. I just appreciate what the school board's been doing. When you ran for office several years ago, I'm sure you had no idea you'd be making these decisions, not sleeping at night. It's very uncomfortable, and it's not pleasant. But I want you to know that I support what you guys are trying to do. I think it's very important to keep the kids back in school, and I look forward to watching all those young minds march through the door here in a couple weeks. And I just wanted to say thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Okay, Barbara, any more comments from the audience related to agenda items?
Not that I see.
Okay, we'll move on to comments from board members.
I do have a brief statement. This is Katie. I could have reused my statement. I made that joke with Erica. I used the same one I wrote last year. But instead, I wrote a slightly shorter one for you all tonight. I apologize. I didn't have time to print it. It was a very busy day. So as we sit here tonight, yet again, discussing the very issues that we were battling last year, I again feel inclined to make a statement. I would like to remind our community that one of the beautifully unique aspects of school board service is that we don't have a political affiliation here. Serving with me are my fellow community members, not political parties. And the decisions we make as a school board are made with the best of intentions to provide your kids with quality, safe, and enriching education, not to serve our own agendas, not to serve political parties. We are here for our community. We come to the table with the mantra of do what's best for kids every single time. We've gone down this path together last year. Our school district was one of the few in the country that was able to serve our students within the building a majority of the time. There's a few hiccups here and there. But overall, we had a successful school year. It was incredible. It really was. That success came with a great deal of commitment from our school board, our administrative team, our staff, and most importantly, our students. We all pulled together and we remained committed to an ever-evolving plan, and we remained committed to one another. We're all burned out. We had seen a potential for change this year. We're feeling the effects of that possibility kind of being ripped away from us. So I'm here tonight to urge you, take the time to grieve the could-have-beens, ask for help if you need it, take a break, recharge. If you have the strength, lift others up. but remain committed to one another, please. Our school board members appreciate the feedback that our community members take, especially when they email, call, text in appropriate forums. We sincerely thank those of you that have voiced your concerns, frustrations, and opinions in respectful manners. Thank you for that. It takes a lot to put yourself out there and be vulnerable, especially with something as contentious as that. So thank you. The Smart Start plan our incredibly dedicated administrative team put together last year worked. Our kids were learning in person a vast majority of the time, and trust that this team can make it work again. We know that any plan we do put together is going to take all of us. Our kids want to be in these schools, so let's make a plan and let's do our part to ensure a successful and enriching school year for the one thing we can all agree on, and that is serving our kids. So just want to urge you all to stay committed, stay positive. We might not have to all agree on how it's going about it, but please do your part. Please. That is all.
Okay, thank you, Katie. Anybody else? Okay, I'd like to just make a couple comments. It's been pretty informative so far with both comments from the community as well as the medical staff, and I think, you know, we have talked a lot so far about you know, the concerns on both sides of kids' mental health as well as you know, their medical health, but I think we also need to step back and be reminded that we have staff that are vulnerable as well and that are in a position of, you know, it may be easy as a community to say, for some to say, I don't want my child masked. They shouldn't have to be masked. But you are also sending them into a building that has staff members that are just as concerned as the next parent over. And we need to consider their medical needs and concerns as well, just as much as the children. That's where also the board is looking. We're trying to figure out what's best for kids, but also we have staff to anticipate and protect if, you know, in some capacity. So I'll just leave it at that. So those are my comments. So if anybody else wants to make any comments now, if not, we'll move on to the next part of our agenda.
I just have a clarifying question regarding letters that we received. Mara, though, do they specifically ask to not be shared since there were more above and beyond what was shared?
If they are sent directly to me, I generally converse back with them.
Okay.
And ask if they would like them read onto the record or just forwarded on.
Okay.
If they were not sent through me directly, then they are not read into the record.
Okay. I guess I just think it's worth noting that there were other letters, other correspondence, both from staff, parents, and non-parents, really split pretty equally on just being supportive, saying they'll do whatever, versus saying they would very much like to see universal masking, especially in K-5, and then a handful asking for no masking. So I feel like it's worth mentioning that since they weren't all filtered through Mara.
Yeah, thank you, Meg. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda then. I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda that covers quite a few things, including our monthly financials, regular board meeting minutes from June 8th. Ooh, that was a while ago. We didn't have a meeting in June. Thank you for scrolling down. I'm trying to pull up mine. our regular board meeting and then also personnel actions. So I'll make a motion to approve if someone could second it.
I'll second it, Cheryl.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded by Cheryl. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Mark, can you please call the roll?
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes.
Meg Litster?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Cheryl File?
Yes.
And Kimberly Lister, sorry.
Yes.
First. Pass.
Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to our administrative reports. We'll start with Superintendent Clint Payer.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I guess maybe I just might make a little note before I do start, just with sort of the general things that are going on in life right now.
Outside of personal action report.
COVID.
That's part of the consent.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's okay. Actually, that's funny you said that because I actually have it here, and I was thinking maybe there are a lot of names and people on there, so maybe we might talk about a few of those. We have had a few resignations in the last few days, actually, that are as we're moving into the school year. So one of them is Mr. Lenhart, our district music teacher, as will be making a move to Ketchikan this year. And so we certainly wish him well and thank him for all of his service here. They've had a dream of kind of moving that direction towards family, and an opening came up, and that's where it is. So his wife is staying here this year. For people who are wondering about that, I'll just say that out loud. So she will be finishing the year here, and then she'll be joining Mr. Lenhart in Ketchikan. So that's where he's going. We have a new technology assistant that's been recently hired as well that will be working in Mr. Painter's department, and that is Mr. Jesse Birchall. We've also hired a food service aide, Sarah Larson. She's a PSG grad coming back to us. Another resignation that we've had, a couple more of our classified staff. Kylie Swanson will not be able to join us this year. She's taken another position. And Christy Ware as well, who's worked in the elementary school. Also, we've had Brittany Petruski, who was one of our emergency hires last year. She is on a year's leave this year. And then, of course, we have our extra duty contracts for coaches, which we could read through or not, but those were some notable resignations and kind of big things going on. So thanks for that. And also, just a little recap, I guess, of things that have been going on as we've been talking about a lot of things this summer. I've been involved in several planning sessions and meetings throughout the summer related to updated guidance. We were waiting for that updated guidance to come through most of the month of July, and then it did come out. So we had meetings in Juneau a week and a half ago, actually right when the guidance was coming out. Our annual superintendent meetings up there, and of course COVID planning was a big part of that, and some of the people that were speaking earlier from Department of Health and Social Services were also at that meeting talking about some of the same sorts of things. And then of course, as I left the meeting on July 27th, I'm in the airport, and there's the latest update again. So this is kind of that continuing evolving situation as several people have referenced, and so we're living it right along with you. It is live, and whether we want it or not, it is happening. So we are doing our best to take the information and create the best plans that we can, and try to take feedback into account. So also while I was up there, it was refreshing to actually discuss some other things besides COVID. We had a really great presentation from Superintendent of Instruction in Mississippi, talking about improvements that they had made in their state, and just their process for how they got there, looking at literacy and what they had focused on early childhood, and some of the things that actually are part of the current Reads Act that's still being discussed at the state level here. So it was a very encouraging presentation, and lots of links and resources there. So I've already shared some of those with Ms. Kahn back there. Also, we did talk a lot about the requirements of the American Rescue Plan and some of those deadlines and dates. As we discussed in June, we had to submit that original initial plan by June 23rd, which we did. It's been posted on our website all summer. And of course, now we're in the process of trying to finalize some of those details as new guidance is coming out. One of the requirements of that is that we are required to consider CDC guidance, and so that's I think we've been asked that question a few times, so I just wanted to say that out loud. Makes our jobs more challenging, but that it is what it is. So in order, we're an institution that receives federal dollars, and that's, we have to consider it. Doesn't mean that it's absolutely the roadmap, but it means that it is something that we do need to consider. The other thing that happened in regards to instruction and learning is we talked about the new state assessment, and there were changes to that. They had put out a request for proposal last January now, I think, or even farther behind that. And so NWEA, the MAP test, has been adopted. They are crafting a plan for that. So they're not absolutely ready for it to be the be-all, end-all summative test this spring. So we are required this year to institute 3 MAP assessments, as we have been doing with our 3rd through 9th graders, and doing a MAP summative test in the spring. So that's 4, which is what we've been doing. But the following year, then we will be removing that 3rd MAP growth test. So there will be 3 total instead of 4, if that makes sense. So more to come on that as we're moving through. And I guess the last thing that I've been working on and going into the fall is several of us have been a part of a grant with the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and cultural training. And actually Rick, Heather, and I, and then a teacher from each building are all a part of that, Mr. Petruski, Ms. Fry, and Ms. Hillary Mullen. And we have some more training that's coming up this year related to that. So we're excited about that. It's called Opening Doors is the grant. And we're continuing in year 3. It's supposed to be year 3, it's year 2, but it was a 3-year grant. Anyway, COVID. So I think that's it for me. Any other questions for me about other stuff besides COVID? Okay. Thanks.
Hey, Erica, I just wanted to clarify on the MAP testing that although it might be 4 testing, 4 instances of testing in this next school year, would it drop then back down to 3 the following year?
Yes. Yep. So it'll be 3 MAP, you know, the usual quote-unquote MAP testing sessions that we have currently for 3rd through 9th grade. So that's not really new. And then, of course, in the past, we had peaks for the summative, and now we're going to have this MAP summative. So it will be 4 this year and then 3 moving forward after next year. Does that make sense?
Yes. I just wanted to clarify that to the community that it's, you know, this next year is just a little unusual because of what the state is implementing, and that, you know, their expectation the following year would be back to 3. If not, we're ramping up more and more testing.
Yeah.
And that this is also something the kids are familiar with. I mean, we've been doing it. It's not new.
Yes.
And so, in fact, it'll make it more streamlined and easier by eliminating a test.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And hopefully we'll provide more instructional information, which was one of the things that we were all concerned about with those kind of one-shot tests. So
this is really kind of a positive
move. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I would agree with you. All right. That's it for me.
Okay,
any
additional questions for Erica?
Nope.
If not, we'll move on to the elementary report.
Okay.
Is Ms.
Khan
in the room?
Yes, right here.
Okay.
Okay, we have a health fair that's coming up for kindergarten and new incoming students, K-5. Really targeting on the incoming kindergartners, scheduling appointments. And those appointments can be scheduled through Mara. There was an email that went out to all of enrolled kindergarten parents or kindergarten kiddos. So if you did not get that email, please email myself or Mara to sign up for an appointment. Immunizations are free at this clinic, and you can sign up for an appointment. There'll be hearing and vision in every table that you could ever imagine. Going to be a very colorful event with lots of entities. So that is going to happen on August 21st from 10 to 1 at the elementary school. Just talking about class schedules, I've had a lot of texts and emails in regards to what the schedule looks like this year. So we have a couple things happening. We have preschool students that are coming Tuesday through Friday from 8 to noon. No preschool on Monday. It is a Tuesday through Friday, 8 to noon. We have kindergarten starting from September 1st to September 17th. They have a different start date than first through fifth grade. They are starting on September 1st, and they will go from 8 to 11:15 a.m., and then starting September 20th and beyond, they will go from 8 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. And this will be Monday through Thursday. All schedules for Friday are from 8 to noon. First through fifth grade, Monday through Thursday, is from 8 a.m. to 2:45 p.m. And then on Fridays, it is from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. The bell rings at 8 a.m. Anybody who enters the building after the bell ringing will be considered tardy. So that is a change from the past. It's been 8:15. So this is a mighty change. It changed last year. We had a lot of tardies. We are putting together class lists. Those are going to come out the Thursday before August 31st. So August 31st for first through fifth graders is the start date. September 1st is kindergartners. And the class list will be out that Thursday prior. You'll notice a lot of changes as you drive down to the primary end of the building. The city, thank you, the borough has been working very hard over the summer, as well as our new maintenance director, Aaron Bowler, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they have put a lot of work and effort into that area. We will be painting lines on Monday, Tuesday, if anybody would like to come and volunteer with Aaron and myself. That's something that we'll be doing. I have asked the borough to help with the line painting for the vehicles. There will basically be two lanes coming through that parking lot. One will be a drive-through lane only, and one will be a drop-off lane only. You won't be able, out of the parking lot, to make a right-hand turn anymore. You're going to be going straight up that hill. So that's going to cut down on the congestion and hopefully cut down on the heartaches when kids come racing through the parking lot with traffic everywhere. I believe that's it. School starts August 31st for first through fifth graders. Kindergartners will start a day later. And the idea behind that, everybody loves to bring their kindergartners to school. So having 40 people come into the building on September 1st is doable. Questions?
Mine is really quick, I promise, Mike. When do our preschoolers start? Did you say that date?
They are going to be starting the day after Labor Day. Okay. Is that the 8th?
7th.
7th. Okay. Yes.
I wanted to just point out that this is like an almost normal, pretty normal schedule. And like I remember being a brand new kindergarten mom and like, what? Only part day? That's really what we have done almost all years.
Yeah.
So for anybody whose oldest child is a kindergartner and it feels a little surprising, that's our normal slow start to kindergarten, right?
Yes, and the idea behind that, it's actually a very beautiful idea. It's Hillary and Aaron get to spend that quality time with each kid. This year we're going to double up so that there's two kiddos that stay after from 11:15 to 1:15 to be their special guests of the day with their teacher. And they just learn things like going through the lunch line. How do you do that? How do you sit in the cafeteria? Where is the bathroom? What do I do? Where's the office? And how do I get to Miss Cena? Those kinds of things is really what Mrs. Willis and Miss Mullen spend one-on-one time with, as well as assessments.
Two more comments.
Yeah.
One is that I recently drove over there.
Yeah.
And it looks awesome. The lines aren't painted yet, but even then, it was really clear to see, and I was super tempted because there's nobody around to just make that right-hand turn, and then I thought, you know what? It does. It makes so much sense, though, and having dropped kids off there for a whole bunch of years, it's just like an improvement that you just kind of go like, wow, I can't believe no one thought of this before. It makes so much sense, so thank you. That is long overdue.
Well, I think it's been talked about since I was at Head Start, so it's been talked about for a very long time.
Just getting somebody to do it and
and getting the money. Yes.
The last thing, maybe not as easy to address, the Friday thing. Mm-hmm. That's like fairly significant. I mean, that's quite a bit earlier. We had talked about it all before, but is there a plan for parents who just can't get there any sooner than 2:45? Is there
at noon? You mean
or Right, that's what I mean, like on Friday, because it's done at noon, whereas a normal school day would be 2:45, right?
Right, and our Fridays have in the past been shorter for that. I'm looking for our scheduled Fridays. This is going to allow our teacher collaboration time. So we have a lot of new teachers, and this will allow time for teacher collaboration. And then it's blocked off. I can't remember what starts what, but our staff meetings, teacher collaboration, planning time, and our in-service training is all going to be in that afternoon to compile, which is why we can go longer to 2:45, from 8 to 2:45, which is a bit longer than
what has been in the past. They're in class the same amount of time.
Yes.
And are, like, you guys, like, child care providers, are there, they know about this?
Yes. I don't think I've officially sent an email, but I believe that every board meeting from March, April, May has said the dates and times.
Yep.
Did I answer them all?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I threw an extra in there. I had two in mind.
I love it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions for Heather?
No.
Okay. Moving on to middle school, high school principals report to Romer.
All right. Yep. Good evening. Hello. Yeah, we are at that time. 3 weeks, Kinley, is that what you said? Did we start school? That's pretty cool, right? But you've been running, so you kind of feel like you started.
Yeah,
good job. That's awesome. Well, busy time for just administrators going in. Most of the work right now have been obviously, a couple staffing changes that are understandable but do add some stress. And we've been communicating with some parents that have some unique situations just as we get closer to the school year. And we do appreciate parents that have unique situations reaching out and not kind of dropping that problem right when we get there, because the advanced preparation obviously allows us all to get people where they need to be in the best place. So in just a moment to say, it isn't nearly enough to say right now, but again, just a big thanks to Mr. Lenhardt, who has just impacted so many that we've been talking. Mrs. Klupinner, I've been talking a lot about the music program, not just the band, but the choir and our middle schoolers, and he's been in the elementary and the drumming and all that stuff. I mean, just been so impactful. Me as a parent, obviously my daughter was very involved with band, but just what it does for all kids. I love that our sixth graders all learn to read music. I think that's so cool, and that's something that he's promoted. And so I'm just wishing him the very best of luck. He's a wonderful man, has a great family, but just thanks for what he's done for our kids and community for many years. And again, it's not enough to say that, but at least it's a start. As we're ramping up office staff return next week, including Ms. Turner, our counselor, Ms. Cabral's been here, so we're slowly getting the band back together to keep in our music theme, so that's exciting. And as we're kind of getting ready for the big start. Families, if you're looking for information, first of all, just a reminder, check out that events calendar on PCSD. A lot of information there about the registration, first day of school, all that, a lot of stuff's on there, including Mr. Cabral's been busy putting a lot of dates on there for our kids doing activities and stuff. So you can start to see the school year come together on that calendar. So that's a good resource for families out there, and that's linked on our new website. We will, of course, as soon as we get the office staff back in, we'll send our traditional email. We'll put stuff on social media about the registration. A little bit of work we've been thinking about kind of flip-flopping, but we'll let you more information about maybe freshmen going first and sixth graders, because we also have a health and registration fair on Monday, August 23rd, and you've seen those flyers are starting to go out. So that's a neat thing. Thanks again to Julie Walker, Becky Turland, and PMC for coordinating, as well as a lot of community partners that have helped put that together. So you'll see there'll be opportunities to come in and get signed up for Migrant Ed, which I know can be a little bit of work. And we can do physicals there. You can do lots of types of vaccinations. So we're not just talking COVID, but a lot of this required school vaccinations or recommended. So there's a lot of things you can do there. And more information will continue to go out as we get closer to the 23rd. And then that whole week of 23rd, of course, is registration. So getting going. That includes laptop rollouts for the high school. So good stuff. And just big dates. Again, check that calendar. First day of school for students is August 31st. Boy, almost threw people off. Sorry. August 31st, which is a Tuesday. That looks a little different for folks. That should be in the secondary schools. We'll do kind of a fun, we'll be probably on a shortened schedule. We'll send this information out and do kind of an orientation day for all grades, just to kind of get their feet going again and get going back into school. So it'll be kind of fun. And a reminder, both schools, Mikoff Middle School, Petersburg High School, back to a 7-period day. That's 8:15 to 3 o'clock and 8:15 to 2 o'clock on Friday. So a little bit different. We used to go to 2:20 on Fridays. So We're going to use lockers again, so if people are out buying their chandeliers and Justin Bieber posters and stuff, get going, get shopping so it gets here on time. You got to decorate your lockers. That will happen both middle school and high school. And again, there will not be an option for virtual attendance. We want everyone to come to school and learn. And if you can't come to school, then we'll do some make-out work and we have make-up work. It sounds terrible for high school kids, but make-up work. And of course, we have some great tech to help you out with that. We're talking laptops and Canvas. So, and then to the school board members, I just need to remind you that I believe, depending on what the health of our state looks like, we should be up for accreditation this year, accreditation review, which is a pretty intense 3 days for a school board and some teachers and students and that kind of stuff. So it'd probably be in the winter, maybe January. So just a heads up for that. And Mrs. Klupainter and I will let you know as soon as we get that scheduled with, I can't remember what company it is now. It's changed from Advanced Ed. It may have changed again to Cognia. Anyway, it's a great process and we have such an excellent school. It's nice to have other people come in and kind of look in, tell us how we can even get better. So no worries there, but it is some time. All right, any questions for me?
Earlier, but just the conversation about the, maybe to clarify the about the virtual option, that what we mean specifically is we're not offering that option. Like kids, if they enroll with us, they're enrolling in whatever sort of system we're offering, right? I mean,
yes.
If we're here, they're coming. I guess the question that has come, I think Kinley brought it up, and we've heard it from a few others, that so like if kids are traveling for a school trip or maybe somebody really does have, you know, they had to go somewhere for medical, if we end up with a travel policy that requires quarantining, that sort of thing, will there be potentially some options on that kind of a level? Or I think maybe just to clarify.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. And when you say like virtual or online, that doesn't, we still have virtual high school classes also that kids come in here and take, but we are not offering to say, Mrs. Lenhart teaching language arts, we had kids last year who never came in the building and did everything virtual, and that's fine. That's something we did for kind of the extreme state we were in last year. We're not offering that, and that's based on a lot of factors, but mostly just doing the best we can for learning. And you're seeing this push across the nation, across the state, and certainly with y'all as school board members, that we want kids in school as much as possible, even if we may have to mask. And we realize now we can do that fairly safely. But of course, as Kinley brought up so astutely in our last work session, yes, I assume a lot of kids, Ms. Brown may talk to this, when they go on trips may have a chance to connect in their teachers virtually. If kids have some medical or something, as we've always done in the past, we find ways to meet with them to get the veggie education. But if someone said, yeah, I really want to keep my kid at home, but I'd love to be part, thank you for thinking of us, but there won't be a 100% online, you know, ringing into people's classrooms anymore. So thank you for asking.
Yeah, it just has been brought up a few times, so I just wanted to make, you know, because it's like, we're not offering any virtual. It's like, well, no, that's not exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit maybe confusing. So
yeah,
anyway,
absolutely.
I was just thinking that might be helpful to say.
Kind of going back to what we've always, or what you've offered for a lot of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All said.
Yeah.
I scared Katie away. I hope that wasn't.
Nope.
No, she had something come on. Any other questions for me? Okay. Thank you.
Does anybody have any further questions? If not, we'll thank you, Mr. Dormer. Okay, we'll move on to Director of Activities Reporting, Mr. Cabral.
Told you those 50 days before cross country started was going to come quick. Kinley's already on day what? 10.
I don't know. It's been about
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks. They're getting after it. It's awesome. We have some dedicated kids. They showed up July 28th already for practice, so we've been rolling. They actually leave in about 10 days, going to Juno for a mini meet up there with Skagway, Haynes, Juno, and Thunder. So away we go as we start along with our activities. Swim has started as well. Kids kind of in and out due to jobs and fishing and still down south on some trips, so getting them in slowly. The activities calendar on the website is all updated. Plus, there is a one-click little running person, looks like an Olympic person on our website. If you click that, it goes to kind of our updated protocols for everything activities. And then if you click menu and you go to the activities athletic information page, the entire schedule for all of our fall activities is on there from about one click away. So ton of information on our website. A lot of people getting all their Planet HS forms done. Get your physicals done right now as well. We got a lot of people jumping on there already. We had one student, actually two students, finish their Planet HS forms back in May before they went, they left for summer. So kudos to those two. They win a prize.
Nice.
But yeah, we're rolling. Away we go. Middle school, we're bringing back our normal activities that we did not have last year. We're bringing those back as well this year. We are going to meet as a region to kind of finalize our schedules and kind of see where everyone is at as far as protocols that their communities will be doing. We are going to continue our antigen testing for our traveling students only. So like esports, they don't travel, they stay here. We will not test them. It's just for our high-risk student population that travels in and out. So that's where we're at. Questions? Question. Ready.
Is testing the same for indoor and outdoor sports?
Indoor and outdoor due to the travel. Yeah, yeah, that's our biggest one. Some communities up north, they don't travel like we do, overnighting in places, and the public travel, they can really control who's on their private bus. So they're only testing their indoor kids, students that are indoor activities. They're outdoors, they can really control to a cross-country meet. They drive from Wasilla to Anchorage, run, turn around, come home. With ours, we got that little added feature of traveling on public transportation with airlines and ferries and overnighting and multiple places along the way. So yeah, so we're gonna test all the traveling ones. Yeah, twice a week still on our Mondays, Thursdays. Really good science behind it. Kind of the same test that we were using this past spring. Yeah, so we won't be as luxurious of staying in hotels like what we tried to do last year. We're gonna find places where we can kind of keep them all gathered up into one location. Some schools we can group house, so that's gonna help out budget wise. So we can still get a little bit more trips built into there. So, but yeah, all the schedules posted online, even on the activity calendar, the date that the event starts is the day that that group is leaving, and the day that the event ends is the day that they're returning home on what their travel trips look like already. So everything's scheduled for travel for the fall. And then we'll just kind of see play it by ear because things could get impacted depending on where we go and what we do and how the world turns. So.
Right. Or mainly flying this year then, I assume?
We are going to utilize the ferry as well because the ferry actually works for some of our schedules. They do have a lower capacity and they do have a screening process that we follow on the ferry, but majority of everything is still flying. And so I booked those early to get some low rates. So that was some of the benefits of coming in July. Working in July is knocking out all of those. So yeah, we're just going to watch the budget closely, but not having to utilize hotels will save a tremendous amount of money on some of those trips, so we can get a little bit more out of our funds. Yeah.
Exactly. One last question.
Yeah.
Has the district, not the district, but the whole region, has it kind of got a universal policy for travel and stuff? Because I know we had trouble this last year with one school not doing it and everybody else doing
it.
Have you guys come up with like a
more unified plan? Yeah. Pretty much all the schools that I know that are in session right now, meaning that I've talked to their ADs, everyone is still keeping the testing component. And we want to get, that's our meeting tomorrow, so we want to make sure everyone's policies are kind of, you know, unified of what we're doing as a region. Some schools might still not travel in a red declaration, depending on what their community risk levels are. But kind of having an overarching, we're following the same plan of when you come here, we kind of share the same mitigation measures. So kind of change that term, mitigation measures instead of a mitigation plan, sounds a little bit more clear. But a lot of them, we're all going to get on the same page. And we do have some turnover in some ADs across the Southeast, so we got some new people to train. So that's kind of what we're doing. We are going to have we're planning our first in-person AD meeting in October, like what we used to do. Instead of all virtual, we haven't had one in about a year and a half. So we usually do it at the cross-country regional meet because that's when all classifications typically show up. But kind of looking at seeing what certain districts are going to do because it could be different protocols at each school, depending on what their school boards decide to do. Yeah, so kind of the same. We all get on the same page, so we kind of know what we're getting into when we show up at some place. Yeah. Questions?
I have a question.
Ready.
I feel like I probably know the answer, but I'm just gonna ask it. Let's say we don't decide to go the route of universal masking,
mm-hmm.
right? It's optional or we're not doing it. Would you be able to enforce a stricter policy with your athletes that are traveling? If deemed necessary, depending on the community you're going to, like, nope, we're traveling, you're a mask up.
Yes, because the transportation, like Alaska Airlines would, it's a mandate, it's a federal
mandate. But I
mean, like
when you're in those communities.
When we're in those communities, we would mask on our mitigation plan because majority of the communities we go to, they already have a mask requirement in those communities. So right now, Juneau is looking at still masking while indoors for activities. They are looking into the testing, and that's the benefit of us testing, that we don't have to mask while we're with our pod and working out that twice weekly antigen testing is, as we've saw this past spring, proven to be amazing, and allow us to do some other stuff and catch anything on both sides, returning from a trip and before we leave for a trip. But we probably would mask on the ferry because we'd have to, mask on the airplane because we'd have to. But the benefit is that outdoor sports don't have to as much. You got so much better things out there. The indoor ones and how we do specific tournaments are still going to be the big asterisk, because not sure how many communities can handle 98 students coming into their community and putting them all in a school building.
Okay.
It just doesn't operate as good anymore. And you're going to smaller communities that can't handle if an outbreak did happen. So
your plan is to still get to the community, go to your housing, go to the event, go back to housing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really going out and about, hanging out.
Yeah, and a lot of activities, national tournaments that are happening right now, that's the way they're doing it. So if you're paying attention to Little League World Series and the Olympics, they were kind of locked down into the Olympic Village. If you left, then you're done. As soon as their event was done in the Olympics, they had 48 hours to go back home. So as soon as their event was, that's why the closing ceremonies, there wasn't a whole lot of people. Little League is doing that right now with their tournaments in San Bernardino and all over the place. They can only go from wherever their lodging is to the field and back, and they're ordering food in. And it's kind of fun. We actually ate outdoors more when we were on these trips last time at places and parks and all that stuff. So yeah, our mitigation plans worked really well last year. Really, really well. A little different, but the kids still got to participate in some manner. And a lot of that is happening with colleges too, with the NCAA, with how they travel. Everything is brought to their hotel and really strict on just limiting, because heaven forbid if something did happen, your team gets shut down and you lose 2 weeks of your season, which is completely out of our control on that piece. So, but the more we can make things happen safely, the better our seasons will go. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks.
Any other questions for Very well, we'll move on to our committee reports. Since school has not opened back up yet, I don't know if we even have any. Crisis, or does anybody have any that has even, probably not, I guess.
No one has met, Sarah.
Okay, all right, we'll move on to the next item then. Is old business. We had already passed in the first reading and had a discussion regarding board policy 5127, graduation ceremonies and activities. I'll make a motion to approve board policy 5127 in its second reading. Do I have a second?
I'll second. Katie.
Motion's been made and seconded. Do we have any further discussion regarding it?
This is Cheryl. So,
go ahead.
Do we have to put in there the students graduating from a non-district sponsored homeschool program are not eligible to participate in the graduation ceremony? Because I thought we were just going to put in order to, a student must be currently enrolled as a student in Petersburg School District.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the conversation that was happening last spring was to clarify that if somebody is wholly enrolled and receiving their diploma from a homeschool program like IDE or Raven or, you know, one of the ones that are available, they typically have not in the past walked with our
right.
students because they don't graduate. They're not actually receiving a diploma from PHS. So that's been the practice. So just solidifying that, and then offering the, I guess, clarification again that we have offered before, if kids are kind of partially in both, maybe they're doing homeschool and enrolled at PHS, we've offered them the opportunity to walk in the past, and mostly kids don't, because maybe they're, you know, enrolled in a homeschool program for whatever reason, a different sort of reason, so they might not necessarily be interested in participating in the ceremony. So we've tried to accommodate that in the past. And so that just sort of, these two things really just solidify what has been in practice, I guess. So that'd be for you guys to discuss.
So being enrolled doesn't mean that they're a full-time student.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So right. Someone could, like, normally our homeschoolers, they participate in shop and some other band or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have that option.
We have allowed, we have offered that to kids in the past. We don't usually have kids take us up on that because, again, a lot of times they're, they've made that decision for different reasons to.
Okay. So if they are fully enrolled in a homeschool program, they are not eligible. But if they are not eligible for participate in graduation, mm-hmm. but if they are enrolled in some classes at PHS, they do have that option.
It's been offered to them in the past, okay. and we would agree that that could still be offered. Yes.
Okay. Because I know that, I mean, I think there's like four homeschoolers that graduated in 2017. There could be more. And that none of them chose to walk with us. And that's their personal preference.
Yep. That was their decision.
Because mm-hmm. I believe we've only had one other person, and that was in 19 years ago, that got to walk.
Okay.
So,
okay.
it says. So, okay, I just wanted to.
So they only have to be enrolled in one class, and they could walk. That's what that's how it reads right now.
Yeah, they become part of our student body, part of our school.
So if they're in shop class, and they want to walk with us, they can walk with us. We're not saying no homeschoolers can ever go to graduation. Thank you.
I missed that meeting. Sorry.
Oh, that work session, yeah.
That work session.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say no to this, but for what it's worth, I would disagree.
mm-hmm.
You know, if you didn't earn the diploma from this school, I don't see any reason why you would walk.
Yeah.
But I personally,
I think it's weird.
Yeah.
Why would you want to walk with kids from a school that you didn't even go to full time and have any sort of relationship with, or if you're not earning your diploma? That's me personally. I just think it would be super strange to insist upon participating in an activity that is for the graduation of students getting a diploma from a specific school. But I can understand if they're homeschooled and they go to school part-time, they've built those relationships, they are taking classes from PHS, but I do still think it's odd. But obviously we've had, what, two requests in the last 20 years?
Yeah.
That's it.
Sarah, if you don't mind, this is Rick. If you don't mind me throwing out there,
sure.
I don't mean to contradict, but just to say, I think every student I can think of that kind of fits that, maybe took a shop class or just took a couple, I think they were all multi-generational Petersburg kids. We haven't had anybody that I can think of, at least that maybe I know, that moved into town, or even like me, this is my 13th year. The people I'm thinking of, that took these shop classes, and they didn't elect to, but I know that their parents graduated because I've seen their pictures here, and I know their grandparents are in town, so I kind of can see it. But again, they haven't actually taken us up on that. But,
right.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really
happen. To throw that out there.
I did not think of that perspective, so that's... Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much for clarifying and re-clarifying.
Yeah, I think there was some social media discussion about this that was misconstrued on what the practice has been, what the not only history has been, and then also what we're trying to solidify. And some of it we're trying to solidify that just every Tom, Dick, and Harry isn't going to come into the school district and say, hey, I happen to be in Petersburg, homeschooled, I now want to walk on graduation. We have to have some sort of protocol or rule for students that show up in Petersburg or have been here even for years but have decided not to be enrolled in the public school system anymore, but then all of a sudden decide that they want to graduate with their, with their peers. So, I guess for those that may be listening or are kind of head scratching over this one, just be aware that it's not an exclusion. By homeschooling your child, you've already removed them from the school district. and making a special request to all of a sudden bring your child back in, or the child's making that request, bring that child back in to participate in one event that they've not participated in anything all year long, or several years, or even 12 years, just seems a little odd. So, and it is, you know, graduation is a ceremony, and it's for the students that have been students of the school district, and I think it's not a right, it's a privilege, and one of those privileges is it's a public ceremony for those that have been going to public school. So I'm certainly not against at all with students that are part-time, even one class, if they really want to participate, but I would find it as an odd request that if you are getting your diploma from Wrangell High School, Raven, IDA, that all of a sudden you want to participate in an activity and ceremony that is for a graduating class of a public school. Just similar to, I wouldn't expect my kid to go over to Wrangell High School because she likes a bunch of Wrangell people and wants to graduate with them. So anyway, that's my 2 cents.
So they had to take one class, but does that have to be their senior year or the end of the senior year, or just any time in their high school career?
I think they'd have to be their senior. They have to be enrolled in the school at that time. I mean, I haven't thought deeply about that, but that seems to make sense to me right now.
I would say yes. They need to be that year.
And they'd have to, you know, it'd have to be a full year. You couldn't come in and take a class for a month.
I'm kind of wondering about that.
They need to be enrolled.
Currently enrolled, and I think that's the language.
It says currently. I was just trying to pull it up again.
Currently enrolled.
Yeah, it says currently enrolled. So that to me lends it to that they would have to be an active student when graduation is about to happen.
Yep. Agreed.
I think that sounds pretty accommodating.
Okay. Agreed.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? Okay. Mara, could you please call the roll?
Yes. Kimberly Lister?
Yes.
Jay Lister?
Yes.
Gerald File?
Yes.
Katie Holmland?
Yes.
Meg Lister?
Yes.
Sarah Holmgren?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move on to new business, which is number 16. 17, sale and disposal of books, equipment, and supplies in regards to our board policy. Oh, no, you moved on me, Mara.
Oh.
Sorry. Let me get to a different screen. Sorry. The school board policy 3270 allows us to get to dispose or sell books, equipment, and supplies the school district is no longer using. So the school board recognizes that the district may own personal property which is unusable, obsolete, or no longer needed by the district, and that the disposal of such property may be in the best interest of the district. So I'll make a motion to approve the sale and disposal of items that are listed, and I think we've got a long list. I need to go back to my, here we are. Just to give the audience that's listening or the public that's listening, it looks like we've got some old social studies books that will be recycled, a washer dryer from the elementary to be sold, an old fridge from culinary to be sold, a TV, VCR, DVD cart from the elementary school to be sold, and a non-working fridge from culinary that will go directly to the dump. I've made a motion to move forward with that process. Can I have a second?
Second. Cheryl.
Okay, motions are made and seconded. Any discussion?
And we, Sarah, this is Erica. We will set up we'll post, you know, when we have these items available, it'll probably be on buy, sell, trade, or we'll send out an email or whatever. And, you know, we've done it. There's not a ton of things, but people have typically come in and maybe made like a little bid or whatever. So we're not really looking to make, you know, a bunch of money or whatever. So anyway, that'll be soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Next, we will go on to number 18, which is back to school health fairs, which I think was covered a little bit in the report with Ms. Collin, but it looks like on August 21st from 10 to 1, they'll be on elementary school kindergartners and new district students, hearing and vision screenings, immunizations, school information, and more. Or appointments are required if you need to receive some immunizations. You can call the district office to schedule. And on August 23rd from 3 to 7 p.m., middle school and high school health fair, they'll have sports physicals by appointment, immunizations by appointment, and health information, school information, and more. And again, schedule the athletic physical immunizations prior to the event. And the number you can call for that is 877-526-7656. And I don't know if we have any other, anything else to add?
I would just maybe throw out just an acknowledgement and appreciation of the medical center for bringing this forward and public health. They've been actually talking about this for a few years, you know, a way to kind of coordinate and support families as people are gearing up for school. So we were excited that we were able to pull this, you know, we're trying to pull this together this year, and we'll see how it goes, and maybe we'll expand some things in the future, but trying to keep it kind of manageable to get started. And we appreciate the providers that are joining us, especially on that Saturday when they're really off, and same on the Monday, they'll be up here, you know, into the evening for that middle school and high school. So just to acknowledge the efforts of the medical center and public health, and then our other partners that are planning to be a part of it too, WAVE and such. So just to recognize their time, I guess. Thanks.
Will our kindergartners that do choose to receive immunizations during this be able to get a copy of their up-to-date vaccine records immediately for the school to, like, because you guys still require those, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
will
a good
they,
question.
Will they be able to give you a copy of that right away, or do you still have to go back
that's
and
request
it?
That's a good question.
It?
We'll have to ask.
Sorry, it just popped into my head.
That's okay. Well, we have a couple weeks of planning, so we'll make sure we ask that
it
question.
It would just be
for
really
sure.
convenient.
Yep.
Okay.
I believe that Erin Michael said that she can transfer those over for anyone who receives it at the health fair.
Okay.
That she can go and process that when she's done.
Awesome.
Not necessarily like giving you a copy right away to hand to whoever's
okay.
sitting at the desk, but
putting
right.
the process in motion at least for you.
Over, yeah.
You're right. She did say that the other day on the planning meeting, that she would just go ahead and every one of them that she does, she'll update and then just go ahead and forward them automatically
awesome.
For school. So that awesome. and we do that every fall anyway, but
yeah.
it might give us a couple weeks, you know, a little bit of a jump start on it. So yeah, you're right. Thanks.
Okay.
Moving on to 19, staff luncheons. I think we had kind of did we do something modified last year, or we might be doing something similar modified this year again. As staff gets back to work, the board usually hosts a back to school luncheon for staff prior to the commencement of school. Did we pick a date yet, or what are we thinking?
Typically, it's been on the Friday, which is the 27th of August. I believe last year we did we cooked outside, right? I'm looking at Jay, I think, was there, and a few of us were making burgers, right?
Yeah.
And that was fun. I think people enjoyed that.
That's
I mean,
right,
I think
because it was outdoors. We can do it outdoors.
Yeah. Outside is good. That was fun. It's really up to you guys what you want.
I totally forgot what we did last year, but I wasn't there anyway.
It was fun.
I think that'd be good to do it again because I don't know some of the teachers that we hired, and they
yeah.
have no idea who I am.
Yeah, that would be great. We'd love that. Love that. So if that
so,
Friday is typically.
So last year, I think that you guys supplied salads, and there was a comment from last year that all the salads should be the same.
Hmm.
Does everyone want Sarah's really
salad
special
ran
salad?
Out at the beginning, was gone by the time the person who came through at the end.
Well,
so,
it was just kind of like we were giving everybody coleslaw, and then all of a sudden there was no coleslaw, and it was like, oh, now everyone's getting green salad, and it
yeah,
would just be easy to do one.
So if you guys want to just decide that, the
well, we can decide
your
that.
School board budget can cover the other items.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So Friday?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The noon hour?
Yeah.
I will already let you all know that unfortunately we'll not be able to make it. I am in a youth mental health training that whole day.
Okay.
So, sorry not to meet the new teachers. I will at some point. You don't want me cooking for you anyway.
Not even like cookies?
No. Mara, have you ever eaten one of my cookies? No, it's not my skill set.
Well, that's the other thing we brought. We brought cookies.
Desserts and
stuff. Dessert or brownies, like something we could put in the box for them. Are we going to do it like that again?
Yeah. Yeah.
That seemed like it worked out pretty well.
It worked great. So maybe we'll just pick a couple of salads, a couple of desserts, and maybe.
Because we could start like preloading boxes up. And then people could get stuff, unless they had some dietary, you know, like, I don't want a bun or whatever. But
yeah,
that worked.
I want to know.
Great. Okay.
All right, we'll do the details by email.
Perfect.
Sounds good.
Okay. Moving on to our school year draft operating procedures. We did have our work session on July 30th. We all spent a great deal of time covering a whole gamut of ideas. They were ideas on that day. I just want to emphasize that. No decisions were made. I know we have to probably come down to some decisions this evening so that notices can get sent out to parents and the community. But we had, I felt, a pretty good hearty discussion on all much different ideas on what may work and what may not work. So I guess we'll just kind of dive in again.
Do you want me to share?
Yeah, do you want me to, I guess I could do it or you could, either one. Did I send it to you? Whatever's easiest.
It's just in the drive or you changed it?
I've just got it in my drive. Do you want, I can do it or you can. I think I just shared it with you. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So some of this will be a little bit of a repeat from the initial conversation that Dr. Cutchins and Barbara Pennington discussed a little bit at the beginning. I had taken some of these from the AASB webinar that was actually held on that July 27th. So some of the slides that he was sharing were the ones that he shared during that webinar that was happening on the day that that updated guidance had come out. So I had stolen a few of those and put them in here too, but we'll see them again. So that's why they're there. So just a couple of thoughts here, and I don't want to just sit and read this, but I think there's some things to just consider. So a couple of comments about the American Rescue Plan and sort of requirements and what do we have to do and why are we doing this and who put this information out and all those things. So the as we discussed last spring, there are some timelines related to this, and I will go through those a little bit again just to remind people. But the State Department of Education through the U.S. Department of Ed is you know, asking and requiring districts to base their operational decisions on these kind of layered prevention strategies, as Dr. Cutchins referenced. Mostly what we're honestly spending a lot of the time, let's just be blunt, is masking and honestly travel. I mean, those seem to be the kind of two big pieces. I mean, if we're looking down through some of the prevention strategies, you know, the vaccinations are still out there as an option. Clearly public health is still encouraging people to consider that as a method of prevention. The physical distancing, again, we're still going to be, you know, implementing those kinds of tools within the classroom settings as to the best of our ability, or when there's groups of kids together in any sort of location. So that obviously just makes sense. Continuing with hand washing and respiratory etiquette, obviously those are great things regardless of whether it's COVID. Really most of these are, to be honest.
Yeah.
Cleaning and disinfection, same thing. The contact tracing, you know, working with public health on that and following those mandates and requirements, having people stay home if they're sick, getting tested if they're out. One of the things that we did not talk as much about or implement last year was some of these ideas around screening testing, which you heard from Dr. Cutchins. They are really trying to encourage more of those kinds of strategies to be implemented in the school, whether it's by percentage or option. Obviously, students in school would need parental permission for any sort of testing, really, antigen testing or any testing at that point that's happening on the school site. where we do have some room to discuss and where we need to really think about is this is the travel. So we can actually require, you know, I mean, we had options last year. Kids could quarantine for 10 days and be out, or they take the PCR test and they can come back after 5 was what we really had last year. So honestly, those are a lot of the biggest issues. And really, I think the key here is focusing and talking about consistent and correct mask use. And Dr. T actually took off, but one of the things that he has said, and you heard the specialists talk about today, they really do emphasize that part of it. So consistent and correct, which can be challenging, and it can be really challenging for younger kids in particular. So we know that, we're acknowledging that right out loud. Just to say as well, and I know several of you have referenced this, but public feedback and commitment to, you know, supporting what we're trying to do is really important. And I just want people to really know that I've read every email that's come to me. I've read through all the comments. I've had people talk to me or text me or call me or want to come in and talk. And those things are all great. And I listen to all of those. I try to factor them into what, you know, what we should be doing or what we should be recommending. And so I just really want to say that out loud. We don't want to be doing things sort of trying to just make everything be about compliance. You know, but that being said, the things that are challenging within a large school setting is that, I think Alice referenced that too, talking about sort of all or nothing, you know, kinds of things. It makes it difficult in a school setting to sort of enforce or encourage or whatever if things are just sort of like, you know, very, very open. Not saying they can't be, just saying it makes it a lot more challenging to make that happen. So just to let people know that, survey comments were all read through. The board had looked through all of those in June. We did have 64 comments from parents and community members, had about 44 from staff, and I think about 48 from students that gave some great feedback too. All over the board, as with everything else that we're all dealing with. So we are working hard to listen to the voices that are sharing their concerns and comments and suggestions, and then also trying to listen to medical recommendations as they're coming through. So just to kind of give that caveat. These statistics here about just vaccination rates in the community, that these are 2 weeks old now, so we may have a few more in any of these categories, but at this point we have 71% of our staff has started or is fully vaccinated. 33% of the eligible student population started or is fully vaccinated, and 55% of eligible community members have started or are fully vaccinated. That's through public health and our medical center here. I say those things out loud, not because I'm trying to judge or not judge or anybody's decisions about that. I'm putting that out there because that is part of what we are, you know, being asked to consider within this. So I think there were some comments that I've heard from people here and there about that, you know, where they've said, well, you know, vaccination status can't be a trigger for this or that. What I'm saying is, it's in the guidance. I'm not making it up. It's just, it's there. How we implement all of that is what we need to figure out. But the guidance is the guidance. And so we're just trying to figure our way through that. As we've already said, the CDC came out with their updated recommendations about universal masking due to the issues that we've already discussed and have already been out there. This new Delta variant, the transmissibility of it, including transmission from people who are vaccinated. So people can be positive and they can transmit it, and they can be vaccinated and they can transmit it. So the trick there is that regardless of whether they are ill, and we truly hope no one is ill, vaccinated or unvaccinated, but we are subject to the quarantine rules related to it, whether somebody is really, really sick or not. So that's the part that I think we have to keep in the forefront as we're trying to think our way through this. How do we keep our consistent program moving forward if we have all kinds of kids or staff that are out, you know, whether they're sick or not, if they're positive or they're identified within that process, they're out. So if it is really this highly transmissible, you know, that's a problem. So I think that's something for us to just consider as we're thinking these things through. As we looked at those strategies, we focused on all of those last year, other than specifically in the school setting, we only used the screening testing with our athletes, as we've already discussed multiple times. We did not really have a system for trying to implement that within the school. We do still have our school nurse position posted. We have somebody that we talked to last week that might be interested, but we still do not have somebody in that position. I really would love for somebody to help us with these things in that position. So it's still out there, it's still open. If there's people out there or you know people and you want to encourage them to apply to be a nurse here, we would love that. This I mentioned already, but I just put it on here just to kind of remind people. Oh, sorry, can you go up, Mara? I'm looking at my own. If you could bring that part up. So the American Rescue Plan Act, there was some questions about the timelines there. The application for funding became available the end of May. We met as a work session in June. We had a board meeting in June, and then we put this mitigation plan uploaded to the district website. That was per their guidance. And then by August 23rd, we have a few more details we have to upload. Doesn't mean we can't adjust and change, just means we have to provide additional pieces by August 23rd. Let's see, the other part of that, as you can see at the bottom of that, can you go down a little bit, Mara? Thanks, right there on the note. So those nine areas are the same nine areas that we've talked about: masking, physical distancing, hand washing and respiratory etiquette, cleaning, contact tracing, screening, testing, vaccinations, and providing accommodations for children who need them with disabilities. And there's the note here that just says, to the greatest extent practicable, I love that word, districts should consider prevention and mitigation policies in line with the most up-to-date guidance from the CDC while taking into consideration unique local health mandates. So that's where that came from. And that is part of, part of what we are obligated to consider within this. And so there's a lot of things to consider, local rates, all those things. So just to put that out there. Okay, thanks. Can you go ahead, Laura, to the next one? You've already seen this little graphic, but it is important, again, I think, to just have it out there. There are lots of things that should factor into this. Local primary factors to consider when we're thinking about what to do with these policies: universal masking, not travel, this kind of thing. Looking at the level of community transmission, looking at that vaccination coverage, that's a recommendation for us to consider. And that's why I brought those that information to you initially. And then a screening program, looking at how to respond or what to do with outbreaks that happen, and then the ages of children served. And again, the ages there meaning, again, per CDC guidance, looking at who is eligible for a vaccination and who is not. That is how they have described talking to us about that, who can't do it. So, okay, and then a couple of things I think they did. I just wanted to highlight a couple of these things again, as we are thinking through this. These are things that are really related to the close contact tracing. So this is not, again, really, this is sort of beyond our, this is not really us making a decision about whether we're doing something different or not different for people who are vaccinated or not vaccinated. These are, right now, this is the guidance that our public health will follow. So in a K-12 classroom setting, close contact definition, I think Dr. Cutchins mentioned this, excludes students who are within that 3 to 6 feet range if there's consistent and correct, again, that language around the universal masking in the classroom, and then just some of those other factors in place, distancing, the ventilation, all of that. That is not my rule, that is not PSD's rule, that is public health, and that's what they are following. Right now, that's the recommendations. I don't know if that will stay or change or what. As we know, things keep evolving. Vaccinated individuals, again, this is not me or PSD, this is public health mandates and requirements. Staff and students are not required to quarantine if they're exposed to an individual who tests positive for COVID. So they're not required to quarantine if they've been exposed to a positive case. So that could be within a classroom. So again, those are not my personal rules. That's public health guidance. Does anybody have any questions or comments as I'm just kind of rolling?
I might.
Okay.
Mara, can you go back up?
Go back up.
Just a second. Okay, that regarding contact tracing and students engaged in consistent and correct use of well-fitting mask, and that would be used by public health and the school in determining who is considered a close contact.
Mm-hmm.
And who just says, yes, my five-year-old was engaging in correct and consistent use of their mask. The
right.
teacher is making that determination. Like,
that would
I've
be...
been observing these kids mm-hmm. correctly using their masks, or I really can't say they have been. Is that the teacher?
I think at this point that's who it would be. So that could create some interesting situations
yeah.
as well. And we were asked to, I mean, again, we're obligated to participate in those conversations with public health last year as well,
right.
In the sense of that whole within, you know, 6 feet
right.
for 15 minutes and all that too. So,
and, yeah.
Yeah,
I guess the only difference is it's the guidance is updated
right.
because last year was kind of like, oh gee, you know, the whole classroom is out, but this year they're saying, well, if everybody in the classroom was appropriately masked, then we're okay. So I was kind of just curious who would say that, and as kids get older, you know, what my 15-year-old could report as having worn his mask is different than like what my 9-year-old might be able to self-report. So I was just curious.
Yeah.
And the vaccinated not having a quarantine. Again, I understand that that's like a CDC guidance, not our guidance. It's interesting. I just want to point out that it's interesting because you hear a lot about like, it shouldn't matter or it's unfair vaccinated versus not vaccinated because vaccinated people can still spread it.
Right.
And I, acknowledging that, you would think that like there would actually be some testing requirements or follow up, and that might be something that we should add to our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because while I get it, you know, like it maybe is a little benefit if you've been vaccinated to not have to quarantine, but if we're saying it's like kind of like I feel like the guidance talks out of both sides of the mouth. I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
So it makes it hard. I think people are like reading this and trying to wrap their head around it, and it makes it hard to trust it completely when it says two things.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, just
yep.
We can move on. And just that caught me in that paragraph.
Yep, I would agree with you.
I think that's one thing we talked about yesterday in the meeting too. Like, how long is that actually going to stay the guidance, especially with the Delta variant? And like they just don't have an answer for it right now. But
right. Sarah, were you saying something?
I just thought it was interesting, you know, that guidance from public health, that if that was the guidance this last school year, we would not have shut our doors mm-hmm. at all. Because if the kids were consistently using masks, not only third grade, as well as many other students that came in close contact, we most likely would not have had to shut school down for, you know, 2 weeks, as well as even the fifth grade class that was hit, you know, in October. And so I guess I just moving forward into the next school year by keeping that in mind, one of the reasons why we may want to still be arguing, you know, or discussing mask use is that we are potentially eliminating a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's my two cents.
Well, and I think the other thing we really do have to acknowledge is that I would say that especially in our younger grades, and Heather can correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but we were, you know, as the year went along, there were opportunities for kids to be within their pods in their classroom to have less masking, especially if they were able to sort of be a little bit further apart. We know that's not perfect. So I do think that's something we need to, you know, say out loud. And that's why I'm saying that consistent and correct part, you know, that's a challenging thing to implement and make sure it's happening. I mean, even our older students, nobody loves it, but I mean, they're a little bit more consistent about it, wearing them. So I don't know, Heather, if there's anything you want to add to that.
I think that just stating that whether you wear a mask or not, whether you wore a mask or not last year, the guidance didn't state
that you had to go home. There was, the contact tracing was very strict. It was, it doesn't matter if you were, if you hung out within 6 feet, you were going home. Because right. you had a mask on or you didn't have a mask on, it was the same rule for everybody. Mm-hmm. So whether or not these kindergartners in first grade and second grade had a mask or not, they were still going home. Right. Because that's what the contact tracing stated.
Right. So that is a change if, you know, with this, if there were a way to talk about that correct. But again, I'm saying correct and consistent because that is what they're very clear about. And so, you know, there could be an opportunity within that if we really felt like it was, you know, we were able to sort of do that. They might not be, like you said,
right.
considered close contact. So that's different.
Right.
Last year, yeah.
3 feet is, yeah, that's a huge difference in 6 feet that we were going with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. There was many instances where somebody was sitting next to somebody with, you know, with a mask and they were all masked. But even just because they were masked, they still had to go home.
Right.
They still had to quarantine. They still had to follow those obligations.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I don't know if that would have been a true statement that nothing was shut down. At that point.
And both students were engaged. Yeah, that was going to be my other question.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the ability, I know we're not even through this yet, but I'm just this one paragraph
mm-hmm.
holds a lot of information.
Yep.
One of the suggestions that I hear parents saying is like parents should have a right to choose, and I'm not at all saying I agree or disagree. I'm just kind of trying to process the concepts. So if parents have a right to choose, and I choose for my young daughter to wear a mask, and she does that, and honestly, she's a kid that likes to wear one, and I'll never understand that, but. If she's choosing to wear one in class, but the kid that was next to her that maybe was COVID positive had chosen not to, it's a moot point for her.
It is. Like that's wearing, how I read that.
Yeah, her having made that decision will have no bearing on whether or not now she has to quarantine because she will be considered exposed.
Right. That's the way the yeah. guidance reads.
Okay. Also, as Maggie's processing, this whole let my family choose potential plan, whether to mask or not, puts a lot on our staff to keep track of what families would like their kid to mask, mm-hmm. right? Because could you imagine if you were a parent that was like, I really want my child to mask in your school, and then you find out that they weren't masking because they came to school one day and was like, oh, I don't want to wear it. So I feel like it's putting a lot on our teachers that are already doing so much. So that's another consideration to make. Like there's gonna have to be some follow through on whether or not your family is masking or not, and it's gonna fall on our teachers likely. I have another question kind of on this whole masking consistently and properly kind of thing. So we still have our zero symptom like agreement. Right? No symptoms. But what if you have symptoms and you get tested, it's negative? Is there potential for our kids to return back to school with symptoms if they're masked properly with a negative test? Sooner rather than like all of the symptoms going away? Because sometimes these colds in our little kids especially last forever.
Right. I would say last year we turned that over to whether it was public health or the medical, you know, where
okay.
they made that recommendation in the sense that they weren't supposed to come back if they had any kind of a fever. I mean, those main
okay.
things, but we would wait for them to basically let us know what's the clearance, you know, can they come back in 24 hours or 24 hours without a fever? And, or is it, have they been sort of identified like, nope, they really are having kind of allergies or this really is a cold.
Okay.
You know, so we kind of had to work with that okay. last year.
Which we would have to do for any
yeah.
cold
yeah.
season. I mean,
yeah.
we get terrible things that run through the school that it just blows your mind that you think the kid would be so miserable they wouldn't want to be at school, but.
Right.
Well, and they might be.
Yeah. yeah. But I
also been there where I'm like, you had strep, oh my gosh, who knew? You seem so normal. You just sometimes you don't know as a parent. It doesn't tell you.
Exactly.
So, sorry, you can go on. I have a ton more questions, okay. But we can go to the next
page. Those were good. All right. We'll let Mara go. This is not new, but just to have this on here, I don't know if Dr. Cutchins referenced this or not, but this came from their original presentation, and we actually knew this as we were getting ready for summer school protocols and procedures for this summer as well. But just important to note that regardless, we are bound by federal order to have masking for all while on the bus. So that's all students, all adults. That is a federal transportation rule. So that's regardless of whatever, what we do. And I think that, and I believe there's been conversation about that at the state level with activities as well, because it extends to vehicles that are used for transportation. Like if our kids go to Anchorage and they need to get on another bus, that sort of thing. So just to say that out loud. Okay, and then just some other thoughts here. So I think Katie mentioned this, and we talked a little bit about this on the radio today, but we are not where we were in May. We are not where we were in June, where we thought we would be when we came back to school. I personally have been kind of going through my own little grieving process about that and some, honestly, a bit of anger and frustration about it. So because I'm just frustrated that we're here, you know, a year later, sort of having this conversation again and trying to work our way through this again. And it's very frustrating. And I know that many, many people are sharing the same frustration. And I think people are grieving it. We just really cannot believe we're even having this conversation again. Also being said that, you know, we are not, you know, where some other communities are in Alaska or even in larger communities or cities or the lower 48. So, I think just trying to keep that in mind as well. This Delta variant is kind of kicking us here, trying to adjust our expectations. So I think as we're going forward, I think what we really do want to keep in mind, and I think we learned this last year too, a static plan is not really totally appropriate all the time. You know, we need to have the ability to flex a little bit within it as conditions change or as recommendations change. I think we, even though we want the perfect plan and the perfect answer like today, we may make a great plan and you know, make some adjustments to it tonight and kind of put it out for feedback and think we've got it all ready to go. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, we may have, who knows, different recommendations of an outbreak of some sort, some new variant, I'm not sure. So just trying to continue to practice that patience as we're moving forward. We have talked about beginning the year with masks universally, kind of trying to address some of the travel and not really being able to manage all of that. It's kind of unknown to us really. I mean, we know a lot of things were in small towns, but that is something that was discussed a bit during the work session, and I think it's a reasonable recommendation to make. Trying to look at making sort of measured adjustments to some of these mitigations as we're going along and the situation changes. Trying to have more of a system where we can flex rather than it just being a straight up, this is what we're doing. That's also part of the requirements around the American Rescue Plan is we are supposed to be revisiting it. So I definitely think it needs to be clearly on our monthly meetings and you know, potentially beyond that, depending on where it goes. Thinking about those measured steps, looking at those potential to have, so this sort of local health advisory committee, it's an idea that a lot of districts are doing, and maybe it's myself and maybe a board member. We've had the teacher and classified union reps have been involved in some of this conversation. Perhaps a student, public health officials, PMC staff, that's what a lot of communities are doing. And that may be something, whether it's an EOC conversation or just our own, like, where are we? How's it going? What are things looking like? You know, do we need to keep going as we are? Do we tighten things up? You know, so, and then just keeping an eye on things as we are in school and hopefully in school. Okay. Thanks, Mara. I'm going to move up. Okay. So these are some thoughts around what was discussed during the work session. Further conversations with admin, listening to feedback from other people, even some of you on the board, trying to, you know, like I said, I really think right now we're honestly talking mostly about masking and travel is what we're really trying to sort through. So I think starting with the continuance of a strict symptom-free policy and how that is implemented, continued emphasis on all of those other strategies that we've discussed several times and that we did find to be helpful last year as well. We are this year going to make regular antigen testing available for any students who, with permission, who would like to participate in that type of a kind of regular screening, or any staff member that would like to participate in that just on their own. We're going to make that available. As Mr. Cabral said, we are continuing with the bi-weekly antigen testing for activities, continuing to keep our goal of 3 to 6 feet distance between students in the classroom and really staff and students potentially. Just a comment again on the PSD not offering a full virtual learning option this year, except if we end up in some sort of a remote setting or as approved by the school. We are not going to, we've talked with public health and others about this quite a bit. We are asking parents and staff to really monitor that initial screening of kids at home. The temperature screenings have been found to not necessarily be as helpful as everybody would have liked them to be. So that's one thing we can let go of, trying to take the time to do that every time. If somebody wants their child to be specifically screened, of course we would do that, and obviously if there's anything visible or a kid might be coughing or something's happening, I mean we would clearly then, you know, ask them to maybe go down. We'll do kind of a screening then at that point, you know, do you have a fever, how are you feeling, you're coughing, you know, make that choice. So we will be asking parents to be helping with that. So this is a big topic that we really do need to sort through, and nobody has the perfect answer on this travel. Different districts are doing different things with this. You know, last year we had our 5-day minimum quarantine after you returned from travel, getting a negative PCR test to be able to come back to school, or if you didn't want to do that, you could quarantine for the full, you know, 10 days or whatever. So most people didn't want to do that, so they came in. Technically, right now, the way the guidance reads, again, whether it's making sense to us all or not, is that vaccinated individuals do not need to quarantine after they return. There is conversation about, you know, trying to have this be more universal that way when people do come back. You know, is there something that they can do to be able to not have to be out? And I know, Jay, you had mentioned that question as well when I think during the work session. So it's possible we start with a policy that's one way and tighten it up. It's possible that you start with more of a tight policy and then, you know, reduce that. And that's something we need to discuss. So so we took the feedback and information from the work session and then tried to put it into kind of a format that maybe, you know, you guys could look at this and think about how a direction you may want to go. So this one is focused, this would be sort of more of the highest risk, least restrictions and protocols. So not necessarily green, yellow, red and all that, but what does this mean? So this would be basically that's it. You know, masking recommended but optional for all, no real travel policy outside of maybe trip slips or, you know, like that basic sort of functioning, in-person learning and extracurricular activities would be dependent on staffing levels and quarantine status, potentially, which is the case all the time. There's a higher risk for school and community spread with that, we know that. Higher risk for maybe classrooms, hopefully not buildings, but possibly to be shut down if people are on a quarantine status or out. Potentially higher risk for disruptions in the job community and the workforce if people are needing to be be home with their kids if they've been identified as a close contact or a positive case themselves. And this is just, again, that reminder that we don't make the public health rules, but we can't just ignore them. So we work with the quarantine and isolation requirements that come to us from public health directives. So if there's any thoughts on that. Okay. Move down to the moderate plan. So this would be, and again, none of these, obviously we already know this, but there's no plan we're going to put forward that has no risk. I mean, we already know this. If we're coming into a building, we're coming into a classroom, we're engaging with other people in different venues, there's no way that there's no risk anywhere. So this would be more of an idea of looking at case levels if they're low or none at all, maybe having fewer or reduced masking protocols, having it be, you know, feeling a little bit more normal without it completely ignoring that guidance. Still risk of transmission as with any other illnesses. There's still risk for potentially classrooms or groups of kids or even adults to be quarantined or out. But there's ways that maybe we could adjust within a plan like this to kind of tighten things up again. And I think it's not easy. Nothing's easy. To implement, if we're talking mostly masking, that can be turned quickly. I mean, we can implement that. We send out a one call. We make sure everybody knows what's going on the next day. I mean, you know, it's not pleasant. People aren't happy about it, but it's something that you can implement and change fairly quickly. A little bit more of a dynamic plan in that sense, trying to look at maybe community and school case numbers. Definitely want to make that antigen testing more available, as we talked about, to people who would be interested in that. Our extracurricular, just through our students that are in extracurriculars, there's been some recommendations made out there looking at if you were doing like 10% of your population kind of on a regular basis, doing some antigen testing regularly, that would be helpful. And really, we reach a large portion of our kids already in the high school with the antigen testing that's going on. So if we were looking at the elementary and middle school, having some opt-in options there, of course, with parental permission, looking at, you know, would there be people that would be interested or willing to have their kids be part of kind of that screening testing that goes on. Go down a little further, Mara. Thanks. And the same comment about public health and the recommendations there. So as I said, and I put that out in the update that I sent out this weekend, but looking at the possibility of this starting this school year with a couple weeks of universal masking, looking at revisiting and seeing where we are on September 14th, which is the next school board meeting, kind of allows us to just, it's a slow start, similar to what we talked about a lot last year, bringing everybody back together again. It might be worth doing. And again, we don't know what everybody's really been doing with travel and all of that. So, and then making that decision at this level, at the board level, as well. If we feel like it's the right decision to be reducing those protocols at that point, or continuing. So, that's that. And then thinking about the cases within, I mean, basically, again, these are the options. It's like universal masking or optional masking. I mean, that's pretty much it. So if it's a low case count, low transmission, contact tracing is happening pretty easily, you know, maybe we feel like that's a risk that we can take, you know. Masking recommended regardless of vaccination status, that's what I would say on that.
For students and staff.
Yep, students and staff. That's what I would say. Again, the goal being that we want to be in person. So I think as much as we can do to make that happen and make it consistent is really important. Still having our mitigation plans for activities, again, hoping that we don't want those to be shut down or impacted. We want them to keep going as well. So that's important because they do have other opportunities where they're not. We don't really want them running up and down the basketball court with a mask on. It's pretty challenging. So wanting to make sure we can sustain that and keep that going and not have a case that kind of shuts down their activity. So I'm not set on this travel policy. You guys heard what, I mean, yeah. Trying to think that through, you know, returning to school, doing 7 days of masking, absolutely no symptoms, potentially looking at that biweekly antigen testing, doing more than one antigen test, like they said, you know, having a little bit more of a, and then doing that PCR test on day 7, regardless.
So this is not for school travel. This is just
this
for
would be
out of state travel.
Life
going
travel.
Somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The students who are traveling for school are already doing. They already have an antigen testing mm-hmm. protocol.
Right.
And yeah. It's good question.
So they would return to school, no matter if they're vaccinated or not vaccinated, with 7 days of masking.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No symptoms and
biweekly. Even if they are vaccinated or non-vaccinated, this is what they have to do. This is what we're talking
about. This is what
possibly,
we're talking about. Yeah.
Possibly.
I mean, this is a discussion.
But this is just an idea discussion.
Staff and students also.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for saying staff and students.
Oh, I'm still processing. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm making sure I understand.
And again, this is not necessarily based on, I mean, you heard them say that. Like, we're assuming some risk in doing whatever things we're doing. So whatever decisions we end up making in that way. Again, the 72-hour loophole, there are many communities who had removed that well before. We left that in our policy last year. We did not differentiate between intra and interstate. We changed that, you know, in can't remember now, February, March, I can't keep it straight. Anyway, you know, and really, I think even Dr. Tosillo said this during our conversation that we had with the medical team yesterday morning. Our local team, when we were asking about this, Katie was on there as well. And just, you can speak to this too if you want, but just kind of talking through, like he said, it's not always just the travel specifically. I mean, as we've talked about with activities, it's what you're doing in these communities when you're there. So are you engaging in, you know, where are you going? You know, and so, but again, we don't necessarily have a way of knowing that. We do with our activities. We don't, if people, and I don't want to be in charge of what mm-hmm. people are doing. If they're going to a concert, go to a concert. I am not going to be that police. I don't want to know that stuff, and I don't want to be in charge of that.
If we go to this, just so I don't forget, because I know we're going to talk about these ideas and options, I would say to scratch the 72-hour loophole.
I was just going to say that too.
Because we're already, the purpose of that was for medical travel that just absolutely had to happen, and we went kind of round and round, and it never quite sit right, but it didn't also sit right to punish somebody who had no choice but to go to Juneau to get an MRI or whatever. But I would say scratch that, because the rest of that stuff puts in place, like, hey, you know, even if you were gone for 48 hours, if you still did go to Anchorage where they're experiencing extremely mm-hmm. high COVID counts, then, hey, we have this plan in place. You can wear your mask, you can get your testing, and all's well that ends well. Scratch the 72 hours.
Okay. Mm-hmm.